Cowpats and bee stings. Or It Should Never Happen to a Missionary, But It Did, by Vic Edwards. On your bike. In the interior of Argentina, I had expected everybody to ride a horse. But in Formosa, just about everybody rode a bike. The Guarani term for a bicycle is, in fact, caballo piru, meaning skinny horse. In the early morning, bikes were piled outside the banks. At school time, the streets became a moving mass of mounted steel. In the evening, they were heaped outside the cinemas like sticks in a beaver dam. How each steed was extracted by its owner at the end of the show remains a mystery. In this respect, I was well provided for. I had brought out a good solid rally roadster. Once I had unpacked, I was able to reassemble the machine and mount it as a trusted friend that had carried me many miles while I was in Bible college and assistant minister. Now I had wheels, but my happiness was short-lived. "You must have it licensed. Haven't you noticed that every bike has a number plate?" I had noticed that the bikes had a piece of coloured tin wired behind the saddle, but I had taken this to be some funny local collection craze. "You'll have to go down to the transport office and pay the tax and get yourself a number plate," I was informed. There seemed to be some sort of novel variation on a rugby match in progress in front of the Oficina de Registración de Bicicletas. A loose scrum was milling around an open window, at which sat an official grabbing papers from outstretched hands and having other papers snatched from his hands. At my first attempt to join the melee, I received a sharp blow to the ribcage from a substantial female elbow. My next attempt met with more success, and I finally arrived at my goal. The sweating official mopped his brow with a checkered handkerchief and glowered at me. "Come on, then!" He held out his hand. I wondered if it was appropriate to shake it, but decided that he wasn't being friendly. "Last year's tag," he demanded. I could more or less understand what he was saying, and I had rehearsed what I should say like a party piece. "I wish to register my bicycle," I explained. "Bueno, now will you please give me last year's tag?" I shook my head. "No tag. English bicycle." "Then I need a receipt of purchase." He pronounced each syllable deliberately in imitation of my faltering Spanish. How could I explain to him that I had bought the bike second-hand in England years ago? A receipt was not involved. By this time, my fellow players were getting impatient and seemed to be shouting things like, "Throw him out! Kill him!" Although on reflection, I'm sure it was nothing so vicious. Frustrated and disgruntled, I let myself be shoved to the back of the mob. As I returned to the mission house, I remembered that the customs officer in Buenos Aires had put a note in my passport authorizing the import of one bicycle. Hope dawned anew, now armed with a shining dark blue booklet that proclaimed to all the world that I was privileged to be a faithful subject of Her Royal Majesty Queen Elizabeth II of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. I once again joined the assault on the open window of the bike registration office. Having learned from painful experience, this time I used less gentlemanly tactics and advanced more rapidly towards my goal. The official gave me a pained look which said, "No, not you again." With a sympathetic smile, I presented my passport, opened at the appropriate page. He was not impressed. "I don't want to see your passport. I couldn't care less about your passport. I told you to bring me a receipt. A receipt! A receipt!" Although he had started his request in low and measured tones, by the time he got to the final receipt, he was exercising his vocal cords to the maximum capacity. I fled from his wrath and fell into deep depression. When I left England, I was sure that God was sending me to Argentina to extend his eternal kingdom, and here I was, I couldn't even register a bicycle. As so often happens when we are buried under an avalanche of hopelessness, God sends along an angel. This time, it was in the very attractive guise of the chapel's daughter, Esther. When she came from high school for a lunch break, she howled with laughter as I gave her a replay of my defeat. "Come on, I'll go with you," she volunteered. "We'll soon sort it out." And so I followed her as we cycled down the Avenida. My elation was short-lived. As we crossed an intersection, the shrill blast of a police whistle cut the air. I glanced back to see the arm of the law pointing at me. Okay, said Esther. I'll deal with him, as she slewed around towards the policeman. No, it's him I want to talk to, the policeman said. His bike is not registered, and he must pay a fine. Putting on her sweetest smile, she explained, I am very sorry, senor, but he has recently arrived from England and does not speak Spanish, and we are just now on our way to the office to register his bicycle. I was grudgingly let off with a warning. The transport office, the situation had calmed considerably. The mob had self-annihilated or had concluded their business and gone home. The official visibly sagged at my reappearance, but brightened at the prospect of talking to a pretty girl. Esther explained, the official nodded, and he issued the necessary authority. Having paid the required fee and had the tin plate wired and sealed to the frame of my bike, I cycled home, elated and mobile. There seemed to be no law dictating the number of people who could be transported on one machine. I had seen up to 4 young men wobbling along towards the high school on a single bike. But it was much more usual to see a lady perched side saddle on the luggage carrier beside the sweating male peddler. Mrs. Chapel was a qualified nurse, and although she no longer practiced her profession in a full-time capacity, she was still frequently called upon to apply an injection. My bike often became her emergency transport. Perched on a cushion over the carrier to soften the bumps, she clutched onto my waist with one hand whilst holding a stainless steel box containing sterile syringes and needles with the other. Thus we made our precarious way over the rutted dirt roads to the site of the latest exigency. It emerged later that Don Juan was obviously not aware of my medical mercy excursions. I had been in Formosa for 6 months, when Beryl, my wife-to-be, arrived. Of course, I was delighted to add her to my passenger list, as we visited friends or attended a meeting at a sister chapel known as El Anexo. It wasn't until I had left to take up my post in Fontana that Beryl was called in for an interview to Don Juan's office. I would like to warn you against your habit of riding about the city on the back of Victor's bike. You bring the mission into disrepute, as this practice is only engaged in by women of very loose morals. In other circumstances, this might have been hilarious, but to a young, lonely, and susceptible new arrival, added to all the other stresses of culture shock, it was the straw that almost broke the camel's back. Getting the language. A picture may be worth a thousand words, but by the time you have got your paintbrushes out, you have usually lost the opportunity or else forgotten what you were going to say in the first place. Getting the language was considered to be of primary importance for the new missionary, but very little provision was made to that end. How I envy the modern recruit who is given a year's tuition before being thrown into the linguistic arena. My two fountains of knowledge were Hugo's Spanish in 3 months without a teacher, whatever else Hugo was, he was certainly an optimist, and my own inability to keep my mouth shut. Having struggled with the vagaries of Spanish grammar until my brain could absorb no more, or until I had found a new phrase that I just had to try out on somebody, I would pay a visit to a church family or other long-suffering acquaintance, attempting to understand and to make myself understood. One such family insisted on reciprocal benefits. We teach you Castellano, you teach us English. But don't mess us up with nouns and verbs and things. Just teach us how they speak where you come from. They proved to be excellent mimics, and their repertoire of useful phrases increased until my seniors heard them pronounce such admonitions as get out, get off, and shut up with a perfect Scouse accent. Their tuition was promptly curtailed. Dr. Sebastian Díaz-Roig was the leading orthopedic specialist in the city. His comparatively simple lifestyle, he lived in a little house and did not own a car, were explained when he got out his photo album to tell you about his hobby. There were displayed pictures of children with horrifically crippling deformities, but by the side of each tragedy there was another photo of a happy child, limbs reconstructed, smiling and playing happily. He received no fees for working his miracles. After all, it was a hobby. The doctor was an exile from Paraguay. In his youth, he had questioned the omnipotence of President Alfredo Stroessner and the Colorado Party. To escape the claws of the secret police, he had crossed the river to seek refuge in Argentina. He was one among many professional people living in Formosa who had suffered the same fate. Our arrangement was simple. He would teach me Spanish, and I would teach him English, of the Oxford, not the Liverpool variety. Part of our lessons consisted in perusing and translating articles from the magazine of Amnesty International and the South American Report of Stanford University, with special interest in the revelations about prisoners of conscience and of political atrocities in Paraguay. At the time, I did not realize that I was cooperating with a revolutionary cell planning the downfall of the Paraguayan government. Reading the local paper was another method that I used to build up my vocabulary whilst keeping abreast of current events. It seems that the printer was too impoverished to have a complete set of type, so he made do with a mixture of typeface. A word might be printed in a combination of Times Roman, Lydian cursive, or Bondini. It took some getting used to, but the higher degree of concentration that it demanded caused one to absorb more of the information. Later, I got to know the editor of this newspaper. He was a stoop-shouldered, fair-haired young man, afflicted with a bad stutter. It did not seem to bother him. When he could not get the word out, he would laugh loudly, no matter how serious the subject of the conversation, and try again. Against all odds, he was an enthusiast. With obvious pride, he took me on a tour of the editorial office and the print shop. "Good, eh?" he said. Considering the lack of facilities, I had to agree. "Very good. But there is one employee that I would like to meet. Where is your resident soothsayer?" "Who?" he asked with a puzzled look. "You know, the person who does the daily horoscopes." The question prompted a convulsion of hilarity. "Soothsayer! I like that," he said, wiping the tears from his eyes. "Just between you and me, I'll tell you how it's done. For each edition, the print shop foreman brings me the box with the set blocks of daily horoscopes. We've got about 100. I pick out a dozen at random, I shuffle them and hand them back to the foreman, and that's how we arrived at our predictions for the day." This revelation of journalistic astrology came back to me very sharply when I was doing some shopping at a local store. As I paid the smart young lady at the cash desk, she noticed that I had the newspaper under my arm. "Excuse me, senor," she said, "do you mind if I have a glance at your newspaper?" She grabbed the paper, leafing through the pages as if her life depended on it, until she came to the horoscope page. Her finger went down the column, stopping at her astrological sign. A look of joyful calm enveloped her face. She returned the paper with a smile and a sigh of relief. "Thank you, senor. My stars say everything is going to work out well." I counted it an honor when a missionary of many years' experience invited me to preach to his church in Buenos Aires. The accent was different, but I reckoned that I could make myself understood without difficulty. My confidence was boosted by the congregation's response. They smiled with what I took to be appreciation, and even an odd suppressed giggle was evident, sometimes at points where I had not meant to be funny. I'm not averse to using humour to get the message across. After all, my old schoolmaster used to say, "More is taught by the cap and bells than by the cap and gown." It was not until I looked down to where the missionary friend was sitting, or should I say writhing and grimacing, that I suspected that all might not be well. Having concluded my discourse, I descended from the pulpit to be met by my friend, who took my hand, looked me straight in the eyes and said, "My dear brother, such farmyard terminology may be acceptable in Formosa, but never again use that language in Buenos Aires." At least, the language taught me that the use of the inductive method of language learning, while having many advantages, also has its pitfalls, especially in the pulpit. What is meant to be a heavenly message may have a very earthy import.
Please contact us via the Flame website if you want to obtain a copy of Vic Edwards' book, Cowpats and Bee Stings. Well, it really did happen to a missionary.
Cowpats and Bee Stings. Or it should never happen to a missionary, but it did. By Vic Edwards.